Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station. This is WEEI Afternoons.
With Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens.
And three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Dan Ball, something you'd like to contribute?
Yes, thank you. This hour of Afternoons is brought to you by FindMassMoney.gov, Andy. Just wanted you to know.
Wow. That seemed like a Kendrick Bourne. That's not knowing where you're supposed to line up to start the play. I don't know if you guys have followed Kendrick Bourne's career. The guy has no idea, like 8 years into the NFL, on any given play, where he's supposed to line up. The other day, the entirety of the offense looked to their right, which was sort of where the camera was coming from, and they're all yelling at Bourne where to move to line up, and he's like, me? Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, Juwan Jennings was losing his mind on the other side of the line, yeah.
How can you be that far into your career? And this is a thing. This happened a lot with the Patriots.
He's too busy vibing half the time.
I don't know. Or maybe that power station, like, diminishes your recall. So he's, like, learning the playbook, but then those forces from that power station. Ted, you seem like a new agey guy in some ways.
I am, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Power stations cause injuries, truth or fiction?
Oh, I'm not that new agey. I don't know the answer to that one. That seems a little far-fetched to me.
It's like a brewing, but now I've seen some of these NFL these Twitter doctors are like, I don't really buy it, but it is possible.
Yeah.
And I was like, so you're saying that it could be a thing with the Niners?
This is all garbage. They just need a Dr. Franke. That's all I was adding. They just need somebody who can work out the bumps and bruises. That's all. Sorry, Fitz, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I'll follow any new age, new wave, crazy wormhole conspiracy theory for a while. A power station weakening ligaments? Come on. That's beyond next level.
I also think almost every year in the NFL, there's a team that has just, oh my God, I can't believe how snake bitten they are. They have another, are they all next to power stations? Do they all have fields and locker rooms and practice fields next to power stations? I find that.
I always feel bad for the strength coaches because they're the ones that get blamed. The coaches put a lot on the strength coaches as if it's their fault.
Right.
Guys, if there's a rash of injuries, it's the strength coaches' fault.
The bench presses that you did in the spring relate to the torn ACL in October directly. Although with the power thing, I will say, have you guys ever been like, yeah, but he grew up under power lines? I definitely said that as a kid. Like, I would make fun of kids that grew up under power lines. So,
well, you're cruel.
Maybe there's something that's said to it. It's 5:06:17. Stiz, time for The Drive.
This is The Drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep. Into left field. Gone!
The top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. WEEI Afternoons.
This drive home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Before we get into Mark Schlereth, I do, Fitzy, I always laugh every time we hear this open and they talk about driving 55. And as you've noted, on my ride home on 24, if you're doing 55, well, you might as well be walking compared to the rest of traffic. Because unless there's traffic slowing down, everybody's doing 80 on 24.
Who does 55 anywhere now?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Best stretch of highway in the city? Can you guys come up with one?
No. What's your favorite?
I think about this.
Route 2.
Route 2, bro!
Oh, yeah.
Route 2!
Yeah.
Route 2. That's it, Stiz. Right as you leave the city and you're going, what is that, west, out towards the burbs, that stretch between the city and like 128 is the best stretch of highway.
I used to ride that a lot. Open
that up a little bit.
The bike?
On the bike.
Watch
out.
I like 25 and 195, either going from the Cape to New Bedford or back. If it's not too crowded, it's a nice, easy stretch.
Except for those skinny little bridges they make you cross that are 150 years old and are being held up by duct tape and toothpicks. So we talked to Mark Schlereth earlier in the show. He had a lot of thoughts on a lot of things, but we're getting into this early. I like this, by the way, playoff games. Normally during the regular season, it's like Wednesday we start to talk about the opponent. But in the postseason, baby, it's like Chargers game over. You advanced. It's time to talk about the opponent. So, Ted, if I said you, the Patriots have a big advantage against the Texans, what would it be? What can you come up with? What would their biggest advantage against the Texans be?
They have the best quarterback would be number one.
Mm-hmm.
The external factors that I mentioned earlier, the fact that they added all the travel is number two, and they have a short week. That would be number two. I think the Patriots have the coaching advantage. That's number three.
So, got a bunch of them. I only asked for one.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm trying to.
I'm kissing up to the teacher.
Do you think the coaching advantage is that great? Like D'Amico, I mean Harbaugh's a good coach too, but D'Amico Ryan's rarely seems to get outcoached. He's like seems to be one of the most involved guys. Like he does. You talk about no naps, Ted.
It's not only Vrabes, but I just look at all the assistants under him, all that institutional knowledge that all the guys bring from all their various stints with the NFL teams. So I doubt that the Texans, I haven't looked at their O-line coach, has 34 years of NFL experience like Doug Marrone, Thomas Brown, former head coach. There's just on and on and on. The Patriots, I just think, as a whole staff, is going to be a better coaching staff than what the Texans bring.
And I don't even go that deep because I agree with you, Fitzy. It's interesting because you have two former linebackers. They actually both have been in the Texans organization in various roles. Like there's some similarities. I think the biggest advantage, and it pains me to say this because I like this guy. I actually advocated for this guy to come here. But to me, the Josh McDaniels, Nick Cayley matchup of offensive play callers and coordinators is just, you got one guy who's finding his footing. He might be a great offensive coordinator someday, but Nick Cayley's been under fire at various times this year in Houston. Whereas Josh McDaniels, I mean, seen it all, as Brian Hoyer said, done it all, been in, like, he can cite playoff games with this exact matchup and what we're going to do and why we're going to do it and tell Drake May. And whereas Nick Cayley, and that might be part of the CJ Stroud regression or whatever's going
on
there.
Sure, it's a big part of it.
They're kind of finding their footing. So, yeah, I do think the Patriots have the better quarterback, but I think it's in part because they have the better coordinator right now.
Oh, yeah. Andy, Nick Cayley has now been an offensive coordinator for a playoff game.
Yep.
Josh McDaniels has coordinated in 29 playoff games, like literally two NFL seasons worth of experience.
A little bit of a mismatch, but and there might be a mismatch in the Texans' direction, which obviously would be that defensive front, right?
Yep.
That pass rush against your offensive line. But we did talk to Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL Insider, earlier in the show, so we asked him for a prediction in this game, and, well, he hemmed and hawed a little.
What's our last game that I'm missing?
Yeah, you might know Houston and New England Sunday.
Houston, you guys. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I'll take just because I love you guys so much. I'll take Houston 45-10.
Oh, I'm just
busted balls. I think it'll be close. Listen, man, I don't think I think this defense is really good. This Houston defense is, as you guys know, I think it's the best in football. But man, I'm concerned about the way CJ Stroud has played. And I'm concerned about that offense. I'll take just because I love you guys, I'm going to take New England in a tight one. I'm going to call it 17-16 New England.
Ted, do you think he wanted to pick the Patriots? Sounded like the other way.
No. I think he did.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, he does radio in Boston every week up here. I think he did.
I think he wanted to pick Houston.
Well, but is that the only reason he wanted to pick the Patriots?
Yes.
Did he believe the Patriots are going to win the football game?
No.
Okay.
I do not think he believes. I think he sees that defense and what that defense can do to people. That defense did it to Aaron Rodgers. I watched him do it a couple weeks ago to Justin Herbert, the guy you just did it to. They had him running for his life, feeling bad, all those things. Drake May, Josh McDaniels, I have a lot of faith in you guys. If you get this done, I'll have even more faith in you a week from now. Absolutely.
The Texans defense has faced 10 or 8 top 10 offenses this year.
Mm.
And so they're used to going up against really good offenses.
And
that scares me.
Despite facing those, they finished 16 points allowed, was like one of the better seasons in the last decade plus. So, so you can't say they didn't face anybody. No, they faced them. And they won those battles with good offenses. And you're a good offense, Drake May. You're a good offense, Josh McDaniels. But you got a challenge. Dan Ball?
And there's something about it specifically being Mark Schlereth giving that opinion that worries me. A guy that played guard who famously a couple weeks ago was like, quarterbacks, they're soft. They don't actually have to work hard with what they do. Him looking at that Texans pass rush and being as worried for the Patriots as he was or was trying to dance around worries me even more than, say, if I heard that from Hoyer or Schefter or Curran or somebody else.
And I just think about the raw strength of Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson against Will Campbell. Like,
yep.
They might be turnstiles or not even just sandbags or just tackling dummies they go around.
Yeah, it's there, and we're going to delve into this as the week goes on, and we'll hear them start to talk about it. Drake May will have his press conference, and Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels will talk to all those guys. But this is a really, you know, I said it last week, you know, you get into these old strength versus strength matchups, but then weakness versus weakness. And I really feel like they beat the Chargers because you won the weakness versus weakness game. Their offensive line wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. You supposedly don't have a great pass rush, and you won that battle. Your pass rush dominated their weaker offensive line.
Yeah, and Andy, I would like to remind you that that one of the big themes of the week, of course, is the exes that live in Texas, the expats factor from Caserio on down. There's a lot of former New England Patriot on their offensive line. Two of their five starters, sometimes three, depending on the situation. Jake Andrews, Sidy Sow, Trent Brown. Come on now, Harold Landry. Let's go, Clavon Chase on. Like, let's get after it, boys.
Yep, we're going to get into some of those connections and the Patriots South that still exists under Nick Caserio up next on the docket here. But we did talk to Brian Hoyer, and we finally fleshed it out that that whole ending you saw to the documentary, Apple TV, Robert talking about how Bill, you know, the game plan against the Rams kind of reinvigorated his belief in him. It was all poppycock. It was all Brian Hoyer, and we asked him about it.
Fiction.
No, fact.
Fact.
No. Those guys, like, the one thing, it's hard when you're the backup quarterback because you're the one guy who doesn't step on the field, right? Even the other guys, like special teams, all of those things. The story goes, I was sitting there, and it's Tuesday. You have to have an off day. I'm sitting there in Atlanta, and I'm just scrolling through, and I saw this docuseries that the Rams had done that year. It was kind of like a Hard Knocks, but internally. And a lot of the terminology, I was like, well, I know that play. I know that formation. I know that. I'm like, this is the same offense that I ran in San Francisco. So I felt very confident in what my knowledge of what they were going to do was. And so when I was with Kyle Shanahan, a lot of times he would get into formation, get to the ball, see the defense, and then call the play in. Well, you know, it cuts off at 15 seconds. So if you change after that, you know, now all of a sudden they called the wrong play into the wrong coverage. Mm-hmm. But look, those guys went out and executed and did it. It was a phenomenal game defensively.
No. Please, Brian, you can phrase it however you want. You gave them the answer to the test.
Yeah.
Basically, mm-hmm. he hand spoons what he needs the quarterback to do up to a certain point, and then the clock changed. You know, they can't talk to his quarterback anymore, so the defense can change what they show, and it had them all befuddled, man.
Yep. This actually reminded me of the Waterboy when Henry Winkler, the coach, loses his notebook and he doesn't know what to do. You basically took the notebook away from Jared Goff, and he suddenly is out there.
Yep.
And Fitzy, how many touchdowns did he score?
Zero. I think it was two less than two, so zero.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, yep. He got three points. We were talking about a super. Now, to be fair, I don't know what the Rams were doing to Tom Brady because it was a pretty low-scoring Super Bowl overall. It was a punter's battle.
Can real quick, I referenced that Super Bowl to this last game. I thought it was a compelling game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting texts from my family and friends the whole game. This game's boring. This game sucks. I'm like, you know, it's compelling because it's a one-score game for the most of the game. In one play, one missed tackle, one mistake could be the difference in winning or losing that game.
You sound like a soccer fan trying to tell me why soccer's awesome, too. I'm telling you, you're 90 minutes, you're on the edge of your seat because any goal is the game-winning goal kind of thing. I was a little – I didn't love the way the game played, just like that Super Bowl I didn't love. But it was very similar, right down to the fact we talked about this, Fitzy and I, yesterday.
Yeah.
The deep ball to the tight end. Now, Hunter Henry scored in the Super Bowl. Gronk catches it down to, like, the two, and then Sony Michel punches it in. But there were a lot of similarities between these games and the style of the games and everything that played out. All right, speaking of things playing out. So we had a three-point stance today. And I say that factually. We had a three-point stance today because I gave my opinion. And, Stiz, we have this audio. Let's play the nice Jacksonville lady again and see what ignited just a brouhaha here on the show.
I just want to tell you congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
Hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
And you did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so you just hold your head up, okay?
Thank
and
you,
ladies
ma'am.
And gentlemen, Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
That wasn't a post-game presser, was it?
That oh, yeah, it was.
Fan fest.
No, yeah, that was, that was a post-game press conference shortly after a playoff loss where Lynn Jones, I believe her name was, Jacksonville Free Press, very nice woman, very nice message, just shouldn't be delivering it in that situation. And he did not have a great season because Adam Schefter told me you have to win in the playoffs to have a great season, even though Adam Schefter retweeted said post-game comment from Lynn Jones and said it was awesome. We got into a big fight. I think we landed on Stiz. You think I'm a big bully jerk because I think that was the wrong place, wrong
time. I think all you people giving this poor woman guff, what would Trump say?
Losers.
That's all.
And bunch I'm not, of herbs.
I've never spoken with the woman. I can't actually give her, like, guff personally. I just, it's Fitzy, and I know you're on that side of the aisle as well, so to speak, where you think post-game press conferences should now just be open mic night. Just tell, do whatever you want to do when you get the mic. Tell a joke.
You're trying to paint me into a corner and color a certain way and go back on that, you jerk. No, I just, I'm giving her a mulligan. I think she did something out of humanity. I think she did. She couldn't help herself. I said she was compelled. There was something maternal in her that forced her to want to tell that man, don't feel bad about yourself, because she probably saw, like, through his glassy eyes, a little window to the soul that he was broken. Like, it was devastating to him. And she gave him a hug with words. And you know what? She'll get chided for it for all eternity. And the congratulatory society of football hardos can come down on her all they want. But I'm okay with it.
Well, if she's right and he was that broken, then they need to find a new football coach. Because if he's that broken just because he lost a playoff game in his first season, then he's like Mac Jones. He's breakable. He's fragile. He's not the man you think he's going to be. Because that should be a moment that propels him forward, right? Like the trials, the tribulations. Ted, you and I are big on a lot of social media motivational things.
Oh, yeah.
If he was that broken in that situation that he needs this nice woman to, like, prop him up,
and
then
she saved him.
He is
she
not
saved him.
He's not the leader of men that they need in Jacksonville. They need to move on and find a new coach. If that was
you
death and darkness,
if you don't hear that stick. And just the first thing you don't think is if that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
Then if that's the new appropriate, then there are no more rules. There's no more anything. Forget it. Do whatever you want.
All right. So we thought about that enough. We got to squeeze in a couple phone calls because we actually had Mark, who's been waiting 24 hours to talk to us. Mark, what's up?
What's going on, my brothers?
What's up, Mark?
What's up, buddy?
Well, we got a problem on the left side of the line, and it is not going to get any better, especially this Sunday come 3:00. I mean, Ben Brown, I think, needs to go in at left guard. And as much as it pains me to say this, I would even try Vidarian Lowe at left tackle because he actually has long arms and might be able to be a little better than Will Campbell. Because
thanks for the call, Mark. You waited 24 hours for that. You want to bench both rookies?
Ain't happening.
You want to bench the guy who PFF said had the best grade of any Patriot on Sunday?
So people know what you're talking about. Yeah, Will Campbell got the best grade.
It's stupid.
Maybe that shows you how.
Are you kidding me?
No, he did.
No, he did.
You know what, Andy? Consider today is the
day. Of all the linemen. Yep.
We did not get along on the reporter thing. I am now, please save me a seat and PFF can go to hell.
Yeah. But no,
or that's just an example of how bad the entire offensive line
was. I like them French fried potatoes.
Ted, Fitzy and I talked about this yesterday, and we had a legitimate consideration for benching Jared Wilson, that Ben Brown is better. Would you put Ben Brown in to start against the Texans?
You cannot. You can't do that. And you know why? Because it would go against everything Vrabes has done all season long, and that is basically support the guys. They make mistakes. You have a penalty. You fumble the ball. You don't get basically sent to Siberia like it used to be around here. So he's it's a different style. It's what was the term I used?
Growth mentality.
Growth mentality. It's the growth mentality. You learn from your mistakes. You don't beat guys down. So that is there's no way those guys are getting benched on the left side. No way.
Text line says that last call was an idiot. Let's go back to the phone calls. Let's go to Chris in Milford. What's up, Chris?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Just real quick, to be the best, you're going to beat the best.
Woo!
I don't know why we're scared of this Houston Texans team. Yeah, they got a nasty defense, but guess what? If we're going to get to where we're going, we got to face teams like this head on and take care of business. So let's stop being afraid of this defense. Their offense sucks. Let's go out this week and take care of business to the next step.
Well said, Chris. Yeah. I like the pep rally. And it made me think, Ted, if you were doing radio, so we're talking about the offensive line. Is it that good? Is it good enough? If you were doing radio back in your day, back in Houston,
yeah,
you guys would be taking phone calls questioning the quarterback and the turnovers how he's playing.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be worried about the quarterback, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So let's not pretend that, yes, the defense is really good in Houston, but they have their own warts or angst or whatever you want to call it there. So this is an even battle where teams have strengths and weaknesses. But Fitzy, what did I say weeks ago? All these teams have a little sucky to them.
That's right. We had 12 teams on Wild Card Weekend, so we had 12 different suckies. Now we have only 8 teams left, and yet 8 suckies. Whose sucky will be suckiest this weekend?
That's what we're going to find out this weekend and moving forward in the postseason. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, Fitzy just touched on it. There's a lot of connections between the Patriots and the Texans, and not just that Ted Johnson played for the Patriots and covered both teams. Nick Caserio, others, the whole organization, the coaching staff. We'll talk about some of those connections and whether that will have any impact at all on the game that's played Sunday night between Mike Vrabel's team and D'Amico Ryan's team. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, for the final time, Dan Ball, what's trending?
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Be proud, or proud to be local since 1860. The Bruins host the Detroit Red Wings tonight at TD Garden. Puck drop is at 7:30. Boston swept their 2 games over the weekend against the Rangers and Penguins and now have won 5 of their last 6 games. Jeremy Swayman will start in net for the Bees tonight. The Celtics fell to the Indiana Pacers on the road last night. The final was 98-96. Jaylen Brown missed the contest due to back spasms, and yesterday the NBA fined Brown $35,000 for post-game comments in which he criticized officials after Saturday's Celtics loss to the Spurs. Brown followed up his critique by saying, quote, "They can find me whatever they want." Boston plays game 2 of a 4-game road trip on Thursday night in Miami. Patriots players were off today and return to the practice field tomorrow. New England will host the 5th-seeded Houston Texans in the AFC divisional round on Sunday at Gillette. Kickoff has been set for 3 p.m. New this afternoon, per ESPN's Adam Schefter, Mike Tomlin has stepped down as the Pittsburgh Steelers head coach, ending a 19-year run during which he never had a losing season. The Steelers will begin their search for just their 4th head coach since 1969. Other news from around the NFL, the Eagles have informed offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo that they are making a change at the offensive coordinator position. The Chargers have fired offensive coordinator Greg Roman. The 49ers are opening up the practice window for Pro Bowl left tackle Fred Warner. And Bills wide receiver Tyrell Shavers tore his ACL this weekend in the first half and continued playing for the rest of the game. And finally tonight, Boston College basketball visits the 22nd ranked team in the nation, the Clemson Tigers. Tip-off is at 7 p.m. Coverage over on WEEI 850 a.m. begins at 6:45. The Eagles are 0-3 in ACC play and look for their first conference win tonight. At Shaw's and Star Market, save more with own brands. And now you can earn 5 times the reward points on hundreds of products. Just click the offer in your For You gallery. Plus, unlock bonus savings when you click, quote, play and earn. Save more at your local Shaw's and Star Market today. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
The sports yakker, the linebacker, and the wisecracker. Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
Well, Steph Diggs said he wants you to be meaner. He wants you to be meaner as a leader, as the quarterback of the team. Are you taking credence in that? Or you feel like you need to be meaner to your wide receivers?
I think it's all just based off feel. I think it's based off feel, and you know, when the time is right and when there's a time for it, I think you can showcase that. So just the feel of when guys may need to pick it up, or you know, when I need to pick it up for myself. So just having a feel for it and just doing what I need to do to get the guys going. And I feel like they were in a good mindset and headspace last night.
That was Drake May with us on a Patriots Monday yesterday.
I trust him to know when the time is right. I didn't see these leadership skills in him last year.
Right.
Like, and I was wondering if, like, are they in there? Yeah, he just needed to get some wins and play good to kind of get to that point.
That reminded me of something. And maybe we can put a pin in this, Dan Ball. But I've heard these comparisons. People are starting to compare Tatum and Drake May. That they're both these sort of laid-back, laissez-faire superstar leaders. I don't see the comparison.
Drake May's
at all.
Not
no.
Laid-back. He's a killer.
He's got Ted Johnson's assassin in him. It's not over. Yeah. You can't tell, but that assassin is in there.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. It's in there.
I don't know if it's in there for Jason Tatum. I'm not sold on that necessarily.
But I think there is an assassin in there.
I'll let you hang out on that limb by yourself.
What?
I'm not going there.
I am. I'll tell you who is an assassin.
JT's not a killer. You heard it.
JB is an assassin. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phone calls. We got Roy in Wenham. What's up, Roy?
Hey, back in the day when McDaniel was running the Pats and Brady so well, they would always have a few designed rollouts, especially since the pressure's coming from that left-hand side with Houston. They need to set that up, and I haven't seen that.
All right, thanks for the call, Roy. Just one correction. The pressure doesn't just come from one side with Houston. They will look to, I think Hoyer said it, they'll look to meet at Drake May in the backfield. We did have a texter that brought up, and Ted, does this have any bearing? Will Campbell did, if you remember, one of the talks of why he's good was that he was good against Will Anderson at Alabama when I think Will Campbell was like a freshman and maybe Anderson was a junior. I'm not sure where the years exactly marry up. Mm-hmm. One-on-one history between a left tackle and a pass rusher in college years ago.
I think that would benefit him.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Because I think that's, I mean, it's all about feeling comfortable against, think about that matchup for Will Campbell. It's personal. Like, because, you know, more times than not, you're going up against the same guy.
Yeah.
So if you've had past success with that same guy, it doesn't matter that that they're into the pro. It's like, you know what? I know him from college. You can revert back to your games you played against him in college. And if you had good games against him in college, that should give you confidence going into these games in the pros.
Interesting. I didn't think you'd put as much credence in that as you did, but that's it. I know it happened. I got to go back and look the exact game.
The only thing is the difference is in the pros, there's more advanced kind of blitzes that you don't see in college that can mess you up and mess with your head.
Absolutely. And there was one of those. They got one of their turnovers last night on one of those where it looked like nothing, and then they ran a real wide kind of twist stunt thing.
Okay, so that's real quick. Just the thing that gets Will is, believe it or not, it's weird. It's like, so the rush that guys don't do a whole lot is the bull rush because it's kind of like, well, that's easier to defend. Will Campbell struggles against bull rush.
Like Khalil Mack had him on skates.
It's like somebody going up and saying, you know what, this guy struggles with a fastball.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, most people can hit fastballs. They can't. It's the other stuff. Well, most people can't stop or can stop bull rush, but Will Campbell struggles against the bull rush.
Yeah, there were a number of times, and not even that necessarily led to sacks or bad plays where, like, his ass was hitting Drake May kind of as Drake's trying to release the ball.
It's because he sets straight back. He needs to get better at getting out. And here, can we just Will Campbell a little bit real quick?
Okay.
He needs to get out, close that gap. So they get edge rushers that go wide on Will. So they're out wide. And so there's a lot of space at the snap of the ball between the edge rusher and Will. And so that gives the edge rusher momentum to get up under him. When he does, they do finally meet. Will needs to close that distance down at the snap of the ball and get out further to the edge rusher. He's worried about them going inside and opening the more of an opportunity to beat him inside. And he's got to worry about getting bull rushed by waiting, setting straight back, because that gives those guys momentum. Does that make sense?
It does.
And one more thing.
Okay, you're rolling, baby.
Okay, do you remember when Will Campbell, he hurt his knee, right?
Yep.
Do you know what knee he hurt?
Right.
I do.
Left.
His right knee.
Right.
He's a left tackle. Your MCL that you sprain is about lateral movement.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to push off with his right knee that has been injured laterally to get out to those guys. And that makes it, I think the knee is a problem for him with those wide edge rushers.
Interesting. I'm going to ask a question that I may regret, because you said he needs to get out further to close the gap. Would he be able to do that easier or better if his arms were longer?
Yes.
I knew it. I knew this would come back, Fitzy.
And also the narrow, Andy, he's also sort of like, I think right behind, because we all know, we all saw the video last year, him squatting 600 pounds, winking at the camera. So we know he's got plenty of trunk strength, but the short arms, and he's got kind of narrow shoulders.
Yeah, I think he needs more sand in his pants. That old school scouting term of sand in his pants, I think he's a little light in the sand in his pants. He needs to put on a little base bulk, a little more bakemiss, maybe a few more glazed cinnamon buns or whatever Ann Michael is putting out. Because I love his look, because he looks like a lean, mean, athletic tackle, but then he looks like he's getting pushed around.
See, I think he looks more like a guard or center.
Oh, you people all just want to bump him into guard.
What'd I say?
He is, like, just like in the same voice that was the line was delivered in Toy Story. He is a guard.
He's not a guard. He's your left tackle. And you know who loves him at left tackle? The quarterback. For what? No, the quarterback. I think the quarterback wants that guy as his. We were just talking off air about the future and contracts, and you got Drake May for 15 years. Well, if you got Drake May for 15 years, I think he wants Will Campbell to be his left tackle for at least 8 or 10 of it. So
how about 3 more games, and then he can shift into guard in the offseason, and they can go get a proper
tackle.
We're
already doing it. We're not happy. We're fixing things that ain't broke. Anyway, Fitzy, we touched on it earlier. Nick Caserio ran the Patriots personnel department, VP. Now he's the GM, president, whatever it is, down in Houston. The offensive line has got a couple Patriots on there. Old friend Trent Brown on the offensive line. You also have Jake Andrews at center. Miles Bryant is down there.
Hadn't heard that name in a while, and then all of a sudden I heard it a bunch on the radio broadcast last night, heading home to watch it on TV. Miles Bryant was everywhere.
He's a good. I always liked Miles Bryant. He's just undersized
for like what he is. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's one of those like a good defense has a guy like him.
An overachiever.
Yeah, definitely an overachiever. You know, you still need your Stingley or your Christian Gonzalez to build around, but then the Bryants fill it in sort of back end it there. But Fitzy, all these connections, are these, it made me think when you put this in the email chain this morning. So Mike Vrabel used to be with Houston. He was their D coordinator, D'Amico, right? Like,
what's it mean?
Is it interesting or is it important? Like, to use the Vrabel phrase?
It's not important.
No?
Nope.
What's it mean?
Because this is a totally new staff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, just maybe, you know, he knows a little bit. I mean, Josh McDaniels is a holdover, so he knows how Josh thinks and how he game plans. And so maybe, but I think just the franchise Fitzy to me is just so different. This team's got more than 2/3 of this team is new from last year. I don't think last year's game when the Texans came up here and throttled the Texans is matters at all. We saw that didn't matter for the Chargers. I don't know. What do you think, Fitzy? I don't think it's more interesting than it is important.
If you have the talent to take advantage of the quirks and idiosyncrasies and tendencies of the players, then it matters. And the Patriots, Lord knows, have exponentially more talent now than they did last year in Drake May's first start in the NFL. But, you know, listen, for all the game planning you do and scheming around Trent Brown's slower on this side and Jake Andrews can be beat by this kind of rush and blah, blah, blah. So if Will Anderson and Daniil Hunter and Pollock and Petre and Stingley and company have their way, then none of this is going to matter for a lick.
You know what, it just hit me, and we can put this to bed because we're not Texans radio, but we all take victory laps for how quickly the Patriots have, you know, turned it around. There was a couple lean years, but now they're back in the playoffs. You got your quarterback. There might be no better example of that than Houston, because if you think about where they were once upon a time with D-Hop and J.J. Watt and then your MVP franchise quarterback in Deshaun Watson, and then how the wheels fell off. Remember, there were just like coach firings and accusations that the organization was being run by the Bible. And then you had the scandal of the massage and
oh yeah,
like they
Deshaun Watson,
fell so far in like a soap opera kind of way. It wasn't just football.
It was Belichick's guy from up here. Who was the
yes.
What was
Fitzy? What's the guy's name? The bald guy that was
Jack
like
Easterby.
Jack Easterby.
Yeah. Like, he got into the owner's ear and
and it went sideways so fast. Yes.
Remember his stand up?
Yes, it wasn't great.
Pac
it was
the calm.
Yes, that's the guy. That's right. Fitzy, that's the guy you want to follow on stage because after him, you'll be hitting one bazing, one liner, nail it one after another.
Easterby's my opener everywhere I go.
I want to know where Easterby is. They need to do a 30 for 30 on Jack Easterby. I'd be curious how he got the rise of power of Jack Easterby.
Somehow the guy who led Bible class turned into like the president of the football club.
Crazy.
And it's like, what is he doing? But they bounced back, right? They get C.J. Stroud. They get the right coach and D'Amico Ryans, and now they make the playoffs every year. Yep. Like, we'll see where they go, but they make the playoffs every year. 617-779-7937. Starting the buildup towards Patriots and Texans Sunday afternoon at Gillette Stadium. And right now, I think I'm being set up. Up next on WEEI Afternoons, we have Odds and Ends. And I'm being told Dan Ball has something special that he would like me to react to organically. I don't know how this is going to go, but I'm pretty sure you're going to want to tune in to find out. That's next here on WEEI.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Back here in WEEI Afternoons, coming up on Odds and Ends, brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K to donate your car today. All right, Dan Ball, I'm donating this segment to you, and feel like it's going to be interesting. What do you got?
It's always interesting. So Stiz and I were bouncing some ideas around. He found across something on Twitter that we wanted to share with you guys, and we like honesty in sports. Honesty is always the best policy. Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti decided to be, I would say, honest to a fault in discussing the dismissal of his now former head coach, John Harbaugh. Go ahead.
If Tyler Loop makes that field goal, is John Harbaugh still here coaching this team?
For a week.
For a week. Okay.
with the okay at the end.
Wow.
Did not hesitate, did not miss a beat. Would John Harbaugh still be here for a week? So
for a week.
No matter if that kick was, you know, you talked about it earlier when we found out Mike Tomlin was stepping down. Whoever made that kick was moving on. Whoever missed that kick, their coaches get.
Yeah.
Not the case. No matter the result of if the kick was being made or not, John Harbaugh was out in Baltimore. And I can't remember an honest answer from an owner quite like that. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, so they were clearly broken, their relationship, or, you know, and after 18 years, a Super Bowl, multiple franchise quarterbacks, apparently Bisciotti was like, I'm done.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, some of the stuff that's come out. They asked him about Lamar Jackson having input in the next quarterback, too, and he's like, he'll have a say, but he doesn't have any power. You know, I have the power, it's a great answer. You know,
it's
interesting. Did you guys hear what the supposed demands are for John Harbaugh?
Oh, yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
Like a white leopard in his office, only brown M&Ms.
Right,
that was weird.
And $20 million a year and $10 million for salaries for his staff.
Full control of roster. Control. Hire the GM or say in the hire of the GM.
It sounds like a Belichick offer. That's what Belichick would do.
So, or Parcellian or one of those guys. And I personally don't think he's
earned that
or in that world. I also don't even know how much that world even exists anymore, where you're like, that's full power. That's giving him full power. And the more we hear about most places, there isn't full power anymore. We even talk about it here, like, who has final say on the roster? Is it technically Elliott Wolf, but Mike Vrabel is actually running the organization, like some of that stuff?
It's just, but there was so many times, so many guys, good head coaching candidates, didn't want to go to the Jaguars because they had a general manager in place had, you know, terrible history at bringing in players. So the Dolphins hired a new general manager. The Giants are keeping their general manager. Do you want to go to those teams if their general managers are already in place?
Probably not. Probably not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's where you say if you like the guy and you have full roster say, then maybe that's okay. Yeah. But I also, I understand it. Everybody tells me John Harbaugh is the best candidate out there, that he has the pick of the job. Like, so if you give him that leverage, if that's true, then ask for it all, right? Get as much as you can up front, because it's going to be harder to get later. They all want you, right? The Giants want you. The Falcons want you. All these teams want you. Use your leverage, right? Put whatever you can into that contract, and it also makes your job easier.
Can we do we think en masse that he's the best candidate, that he's the best coach?
Probably, but I think it's a really weak field. Who would the other option be? Like, is the second best option right now
Bill Belichick?
No, that is not accurate.
Well, Minter and Shula are going to be two of the hottest names.
Okay,
there,
that
they have no prior experience.
I'll
so
take
maybe
Harbaugh over them. You like Stefanski more than I do, Fitzy.
Yes,
you
I
think
do.
Two-time coach of the year. He's an interesting one. All the college guys have sort of like the Notre Dame guy wanted no part of it. He said, no, I'm not coming to the NFL.
How about going back local to BC? Jeff Hafley's in the mix.
Jeff Hafley, the former BC coach, who's now
after
the
his defense absolutely collapsed on national TV Saturday night.
I said Packers, Christian Arcand. Matt Patricia once made that move, Fitzy. He went on to become a head coach after he lost to the Eagles, I believe, in the Super Bowl, right? He gave up a boatload of yards. So,
wait, real quick, how'd that work out?
Not great. No, it definitely did not work out great. That, to me, is one of so there's nine jobs. Are there? Could we, if we knew what we were doing, if we were a consulting firm, one of those firms that helps with these searches?
Yeah, those firms suck at that.
But could we come up with nine, like, gold star blue chip candidates? I don't know if I could.
No.
that I could really tell an owner, listen, this is the person for you. This guy is a great candidate because of X. I might be able to come up with three, four.
Where do you put Mike McDaniel? I mean, he was supposed to be the next great offensive mind, but
I put him in an OC's box for 2 years.
He's not good enough to get that immediate next job right away. Like, I think Brian Daboll, if I'm talking myself into this, I could talk myself into Brian Daboll being one of the better nine coaching candidates in the National Football League. And he did something, I don't know if you guys saw that report.
Called Harbaugh.
Yeah, told Harbaugh, like, the Giants is a great job, Dart's a great kid, like, this is a great situation.
Oh, that's cool.
He actually gave a weird letter of recommendation for the place that just fired him.
Interesting.
So that was interesting. Yes, Dan Ball.
Did you guys mention Brian Flores, Mike McCarthy is the other two?
Yes.
Right. Mike McCarthy wins.
A good one.
He wins a lot of regular season games. Brian Flores, a lot of people want to paint as a potential Pittsburgh because he coached there for
a
year, 2 years.
He is suing the NFL, though, still.
Yeah, he is, but he coached in the NFL while still suing the NFL.
I know, but not as a head coach.
I know, but you can't not give him the job for that reason, or I feel like he just tacks that onto the lawsuit. Right,
if Brian Flores coaches somewhere, and Brian Daboll is his offensive coordinator. Irony will win the day.
That would be fun.
But Buffalo also said that Stephen Ross told him to tank a game, didn't he?
Yeah,
isn't that part of the?
Oh yeah,
and
allegation?
He wouldn't step on the boat with Brady because he knew that was.
I think an owner would be like, I don't know if I can trust this guy.
But he's pretty good, and there's no other candidates. Yeah, I don't know. All right, Christian Arkin's here.
Hi, Andy.
His ears perked up when I said something earlier.
You did not say Packer, I'll tell you that. We have a big show tonight, full four-hour show. Very excited. Mego's going to join the show at 7:30. We'll talk with her. We'll get into this matchup here with the Texans. I'm very intrigued by how similar these games were, the Texans and the Patriots, and sort of the wild card overlap that you saw. Dominant defense, quarterback turning the ball over a lot, winning anyway, key players leaving with concussions. Like, there was a lot of the same things happened to both teams, which is very, very odd. Yeah,
tell me this is the script this year?
The script writers are a little obvious.
It's interesting that the guys that got concussions would be covering each other in this game coming up.
Good point. Anyway, we'll have that. Lots on Bregman, of course. I haven't really got to sink my teeth into that yet, so we'll have that and all the normal fun bells and whistles.
I can say this. I know I say always to tune into the Christian Arkin show, but Christian Arkin ranting about the Red Sox allowing Alex Bregman to leave and mismanaging this entire situation is going to be must-listen passionate radio on the Christian Arkin show. Tune in. I know I will be on the drive home. Boys, nice job. We will continue to sort of turn up the dial a little bit on this preview of this divisional round game tomorrow, 2-6. Adam Schefter. So we get to talk to him about the coaching changes and also his tweet where he was advocating for whatever the heck was going on in Jacksonville in that post-game presser with Lynn Jones and company. Adam Schefter, WEEI Afternoons tomorrow, 2-6. We'll talk to you then. Which Sucky is the New England Patriots?
So their best defensive lineman, Mbuki. Johnson.
B-E-T. T-E-R, get better.
A beer with me, a 76-year-old Irishman whose brain's been marinated in alcohol.
Take a chill pill. You're out of control.
And I think the Red Sox suck.